So, this morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. We're in 10th canto, which is entitled Sambonam. First chapter, the advent of Lord Krishna, right? Introduction. Text. What's the text? I forgot. 35. Yes, 35. Ityukta. Sakala papo.
Idyukta sakala papo.
Bojanam kula pamsanaha.
Bojanam kula pamsanaha.
Bhaginim hantumara dham.
Bhaginim hantumara dham.
Khadga pani kache grahit.
Khadga pani kache grahit.
Iti uktaha.
Iti uktaha.
Thus being addressed.
Thus being addressed.
I'm not going to get electrocuted here, no? Saha. He, Kamsa.
He, Kamsa.
Kalaha.
Kalaha.
Envious.
Envious.
Papaha.
Papaha.
Sinful.
Sinful.
Bojanam.
Bojanam.
Of the Boja dynasty.
Of the Boja dynasty.
Kulapamsanaha.
Kulapamsanaha.
One who can degrade the reputation of his family.
One who can degrade the reputation of his family.
Bhaginim,
Bhaginim,
unto his sister.
Unto his sister.
Hantumaraptam.
Hantumaraptam.
Being inclined to kill.
Being inclined to kill.
Khadgapanihi.
Khadgapanihi.
Taking a sword in his hand.
Taking a sword in his hand.
Kache.
Kache.
Hair.
Hair.
Agrahit.
Agrahit.
Took up.
Took up.
Translation. Kamsa was a condemned personality in the Boja dynasty because he was envious and sinful. Therefore, upon hearing this omen from the sky, he caught hold of his sister's hair with his left hand and took up his sword with his right hand to sever her head from her body. Lovely scene. Purport. Kamsa was driving the chariot and controlling the reins with his left hand. But as soon as he heard the omen that his sister's eighth child would kill him, he gave up the reins, caught hold of his sister's hair, and with his right hand took up a sword to kill her. Before, he had been so affectionate to that he was acting as his sister's chariot driver. But as soon as he heard that his self-interest or his life was at risk, he forgot all affection for her and immediately became a great enemy. This is the nature of demons. No one should trust a demon despite any amount of affection. Aside from this, a king, a politician, or a woman cannot be trusted since they can do anything abominable for the personal interest. Chanakya Pandit therefore says, Vishvasunaiva kartavya strishu raja kuleshu cha. Kamsa was a condemned personality in the Boja dynasty because he was envious and sinful. Therefore, upon hearing this omen from the sky, he caught hold of his sister's hair with his left hand and took up his sword with his right hand to sever her head from her body. Let's see what my notes have to say about that. Hopefully something smart. Sort of a bipolar situation here. We have a person being one person 1 minute and then being a totally different person the other minute. At first, Kamsa was very affectionate. As a matter of fact, even though this is sort of a traditional thing, but still it's an act of kindness, namely that he accompanied his sister to her new home. I mean, every time you switch a home, it's a difficulty. That's why traveling is difficult. Like you wake up in the morning, you're not always sure what city you're in. And so people get used to one place, and not only do they get physically used to a place, but people get used to the people around themselves. They establish sort of a harmony. And this is one of the reasons why, just historically speaking, migrations have always been very troublesome. When the people from one area migrate to another, it's no problem when you have one or two individuals migrating because they just merge within the culture they're now newly inhabiting. But when you have migrations, large numbers of people moving from one area to another, they're moving from one cultural rhythm to another, and it's always troublesome. Always, if you look at history, always huge problem. And very often resulting in physical skirmishes. So, for a girl, not an easy thing. You know, she just learned to live with her family and fell into a rhythm and everything. And now everything has to change. And that's a challenge. It's unsettling. And mother-in-law, the relationship that's like mother-in-law and daughter-in-law. That's a story of tension. great many challenges. And therefore, to sort of soothe his sister, Kamsa accompanied her to her new home. Very endearing act. But then all it took was, God knows what it was, a hallucination? Or was he hearing voices in his head? Anyhow, here says that he heard the voice, and the voice said whatever the voice said, and then all of a sudden we have a complete change. So from a very dear person, Kamsa has turned into a horrible person that's willing to do something unspeakable. Kill his own sister. I mean, in front of everybody. I mean, I was a teenager when I was reading this, and then, you know, when you're a devotee for a while, you have heard this many times, so you don't, it doesn't strike you how horrible this is. But imagine yourself at a wedding, and then at one point the brother of the bride pulls out the gun. What the hell? A sword, even worse. So what is the thing that has made a change, that has changed one person into another, and so drastically? What is the thing that changed the person? This is actually a good question. What's the cause of this? And then of course here we hear that it's the voice. But if we look further into it, I don't think we could say it's the voice. We could say it's the clash of interests. Because definitely what's happening here is a clash of interests. In other words, Kamsa has a certain interest, and what's about to transpire, according to the voice from his own sister, clashes with his own interests. So we have clash of interest. Is the clash of interest here the cause? I would also disagree. It's not the clash. I mean, our interests clash all the time. I mean, what kind of a person is anyone who upon the clash of interests turns into an animal? Uncivilized, savage. Or put into ordinary English, a selfish prick. Our interests clash all the time. And as a matter of fact, a civilized person is the one who learned to live with the clashing of interests. And you can tell how good or bad of a person, or even better, how good or a bad devotee you are, by how do you react when there is a clash of interests? As a matter of fact, we could say that the clash of interests brought Kamsa number two from Kamsa number one. But it's not really the clash of interests. It's actually something that's within Kamsa. That's very much integral part of him. And it's not something that's extraneous to Kamsa, but it is Kamsa himself. And this is what in Krishna consciousness we claim. That the problem is not external, the problem is internal. Man, you're gonna hit the floor. Why don't you sit on the chair? Would you do better like that, or you're?
I will stand.
Or at least not in the back. I'm sorry to single you out, but it's
thank you.
A little bit difficult to. Now you can go in the back there by the wall. You'll still be able to follow. Now you have blocked your illustrious temple president. Clash of interests. So I'd say it's not a clash of interest, but the clash of interest is sort of a catalyst or amplifier. It amplifies that which we are. And so when the clash of interest happens, we get to see who the hell are we. I mean, we can really think of this world in many different ways. I often, so often, think of this world and everything that takes place in it as a testing facility. Like you have a product, and then a product is taken to a testing facility to see what's it made of, whether it is made well. So this world is sort of a testing facility, and this world is, I mean, that's what it is. Here we are. We're packed into this world and we clash all the time. It's unavoidable. You know, we have different interests and our interests clash all the time. But what the hell we do with it? And when our interests clash, we get to see who are we. How do we conceive of these clashes? How do we react to them and so on? I might have referred to this book maybe even too many times, but I'll refer to it once more too many times. Well, it left a really huge impression on me. It was a book written by a historian who's also a psychologist, and he was asked to after the Second World War, many of the Nazis who committed atrocious acts went unpunished, partly because it was difficult to document it all and prove it all and so on. And, you know, you couldn't just allow unmonitored retributions because then things go too far. And so, because he was a historian, so he you know, he studied the history, he uncovered the history to see what was happening there. But then what was very interesting to him after he finished his job was, how did these ordinary people become extraordinarily evil? And I'm not going to go into details because it's not too pertinent right now. But what the book left me with was that, for God's sake, I mean, I'm that ordinary person. I hope I'm not disappointing anyone. But I recognized, and especially I was a soldier, I was in war, and I saw how, you know, boys like 19, 20, 21, 25 years old, you'd say normal people, healthy people, and certainly seemed okay. But then when they were allowed to do anything, just anything, they did anything. Because there were no pressure of any kind. They could freely be themselves. And then everything, all the content, all their moral or spiritual content just came out in all of its glory. That is really horrifying. And we see that within Vaishnava tradition, in our literature, we have a lot of these clashes where we see how this world can really be conceived of as a testing facility. Like, for example, the clashes of the Pandavas and Kauravas. And it's almost always the same. Like, you have, there's the clash of interests, and then it brings the worse in the other person. Dhritarashtra. His interests clashed, and he just went dark. We could also say that often we have this clash of two kinds of interests. Immediate benefits, or the immediate pleasure, and the lasting or postponed satisfaction. In terms of Krishna consciousness, we often have this clash. Do you want this immediate pleasure right now that's going to rob you of all of your spiritual content? Or you want to resist it for a greater good that's coming later? It's much of it is coming right then. Do you want to become a pure devotee, or you want to give in to the temptation of immediate satisfaction, which is typically called kama, in all of its different forms, you know, lust, anger, greed, so on, like that. I'd like to take this opportunity also to mention Vidura, because this was another fascinating thing for me. Again, first time I read this, I was just a teenager, and at first I really couldn't grasp the statement that Vidura thought that the actions of Maya were supreme. And I was like, how is Maya supreme? I thought Krishna was supreme. But what did Vidura do? Vidura just like cut it all and took off. In other words, there was an act of renunciation. When Vidura saw that there was no help, that Maya reigns there supreme, like there's nothing I can do here. There's one thing I can do. I can serve Krishna. And this is, we could say, higher morality or highest good. And we see, let me see if I put that down anywhere. I did, so I'll mention it later. Actually, very soon, in a minute. So we could say it's a dire situation here, not a pleasant situation, very unpleasant situation, but. As we see, Krishna will appear from this unpleasant, dire, intense situation. We can also see that Arjuna's Krishna consciousness also arose from a dire situation. Arjuna found himself in a physically very uncomfortable position. Of course, he was a soldier, so I'm not really a kshatriya. I'm not really referring so much to the battlefield upon which he found himself, but more the internal battlefield. Like Arjuna had a difficult time navigating the situation spiritually, as to what is my duty here, Krishna. I'm really confused. But in this dire situation of Arjuna. His Krishna consciousness arose by the help of who happened to be his friend up until that point, and then after that his teacher, Lord Krishna himself. Jada Bharata was a product of a severe failure. Jada Bharata was Bharata. there was another. It has always been a very fascinating story to me. How Bharata becomes Jada Bharata. Jada means doll. He wasn't doll. He behaved as if doll, but he was so resolved, so resolute, so determined to ignore all of the dualities that came upon him. When his siblings were misbehaving towards him, when he was cheated out of the inheritance, when he was being abused by this, that, and the other person, and so on, he's just ignoring it all. I mean, even to the point that the dacoits who stole him, I'm not telling the whole story, as I assume we are at the temple, I assume you all know the story. Even when the low-class religious people kidnapped him to dacoits to sacrifice him to goddess Kali, he just stood there, ignoring even that. That's very impressive, I might say. But that Jada Bharata, we could also say, was a product of the pain that he experienced before. Namely, that he was almost there, or we could even say he was there, he made it, and then there was the collapse of the system. The system collapsed. Of course, I'm not getting into, there are other explanations of this, I'm just taking this at the face value as it is stated in the Bhagavatam. And then in his next life, he was super determined. Actually, two lives later, but even in the next life as a deer, he was very determined to do things right. So we could also say that let the severity of material existence be our catalyst in our Krishna consciousness. And often it is. the unpleasant existence in this world, let it be the catalyst. Let it not be a dark force that just brings us down, but let it be a catalyst. There is I think it's in the beginning of this chapter. I'm immediately looking towards Maharaj. there is a comment written that that Kamsa is representation of Maya, and that as Krishna's parents, Vasudeva and Devaki, where Krishna was to appear in their hearts, hearts that needed to be pure for Krishna to appear, they feared Kamsa. And by this healthy fear of Maya, a heart becomes pure or purified. I don't want to say that that's the only element, so not pure, but purified. The level of purity increases by which Krishna can appear within the heart. So let it be another catalyst, a healthy fear of Maya. There's also a mention here, I'll just make two more points. There's also mention here of Kula Pansanaha. One can, that's how it's been translated, one who can degrade the reputation of his family. This is how Kamsa is described here. And, you know, to modern people, the family, modern people don't value, modern civilization doesn't value family an awful lot. However, we find in the Vedic, in the Vaishnava tradition, in the tradition of our literature and so on, that Kula or the family is considered very, very, very important. And Kula typically refers not merely to a small family like we typically conceive of a family nowadays, but in a large family. Very, very large family, and the families used to stay together, and before the economic system changed, the very economic system kept family together and kept it large. Nearly every family was an economic unit to itself, which was yet another reason for the family to stay together. And being thus large and being so homogeneous, family naturally applied pressure on its members. We find in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna addressing Arjuna by varieties of names which refer to his family, thus applying pressure on Arjuna. Hello, you're from such and such family. Remember? There's pressure on you. And so this is very important. I mean, what to do nowadays? Families are not that large. Neither are families conceived of some kind of dynasties that have culture and sophistication and particular interests and so on. I happen to grow up in a relatively large family, and it was always important when you went out of the house how you behaved. Because how you behaved represented your family. And there was, like, it was told to me a billion times. You're a disgrace to the family. because this is such a place. Srila Prabhupada often referred to this world as a correctional institution. And people who go to the correctional institution are not always the best of people. And so similarly, this world is a place for criminals. Prabhupada said that as you can tell the criminal by the ball and chain that it has to his fastened to his foot, so and by the jumpsuit, nowadays it's jumpsuits, at least in America, or the striped suit. You can tell the criminal, and here you can tell the criminal by the physical body. So we got the physical body not because we're pure souls, but because we're impure souls. And so where there's no pressures, then it's back to that war story. And we actually require pressure all the time. There's a need to for good, positive, healthy pressure from the parents, from the family, from the society, from the guru, from the gurus, from the Vaishnavas, from the friends, and so on. And then under this healthy pressure, we do good. Of course, pressure can also be unbalanced and so on, and therefore people have a sometimes tendency to perceive pressure as unwelcome, but trust me, the life without pressure is no good. I mean, I remember this one devotee, he lived without pressure, and he went too far. He went so far that he fell under huge, some other kind of pressure of addictions. And I remember he collapsed in front of me, and he was grasping onto my leg and crying, to begging me to help him. And I was like, oh, what can I do for you? I mean, it made me cry, I teared up. You know? Well, I did my best, you know, over a span of time, but he went too far. Eventually ended up dying from liver cirrhosis. So pressure is good. And here that Kamsa is described as someone, what's the, where is it? Kula Pamsanha, one who can degrade the reputation of his family. This is a huge accusation. In other words, this is a really nasty person. And then, I'm very happy that Prahlada Nanda Maharaj came to, hopefully can assist me with this one. I may just about to ruin my career, but I'll give it a shot. I mean, it's mentioned here, and what the hell, we'll try to think about it and then see what happens. At the end of the purport, Prabhupada says that this is the nature of demons, and the demons shouldn't be trusted. But then he also says that we shouldn't trust aside from this, a king, a politician, or a woman cannot be trusted, since they can do anything abominable for their personal interests. Chanakya Pandit therefore says, Vishvasa naiva kartavya strishu raja kuleshu cha. So basically that's two people mentioned here. Raja, which means a king, and Prabhupada says politician also. And strishu means women. I mean, we're living in times, if you say anything against politicians, like there are even jokes, how do you know politician is lying, he's opened his mouth. So no one takes offense. These times of egalitarianism, the other statement is very uncomfortable, and also, I mean, to describe half of the population to be of a particular nature just because of their gender, in most people will raise a question, like, how is that so? How is that just? I mean, after all, After all, in the verse, it's the man. It's the man who's the atrocious one who shouldn't be trusted, right? I mean, what does this mean? That like so every man or every woman, like we divide everyone morally by the category of gender. Becomes a troublesome statement, but I would dare to say that it is said, so it must be true in some ways, and I'd say that in general speaking, men, women, kings, whatever category you can think of, category exists because it's got certain characteristics. If it didn't have some specific characteristics, it wouldn't exist. Like we couldn't tell the difference, so the category must exist. And so when we speak of the category of politicians, we can sometimes expect this quality or lack of this moral quality or integrity. And so also that can sometimes be expected of a woman. Of course, obviously, we can expect this just from anybody. But what's very obvious to me, but what's relatively obvious to me here is that greater the position, greater the temptation. Or also greater the need, greater the test or the temptation. Like we find that people in positions have a tendency, like they say, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And I totally disagree with this, even though we say it all the time. There's nothing wrong with power. Power is morally neutral. But what happens to an immoral person in the position of power? Holy schmoly. And the same thing, what happens to a soul in the female body when she realizes that she can manipulate people? Because whatever someone wants, the other person will sell it. There's always manipulation. That's how things go in this world. As soon as something is wanted, those who have it will use it to manipulate. They'll sell it. And so if you have half a population lusting over the other half may manipulate. So that might be one instance in which, and I'm not saying this just because I was reading the Bhagavatam, and this is this quality is attributed to Mohini Murti, where Mohini Murti did this on purpose, where there was the demons and demigods, and Krishna didn't want the demons to get the nectar of immortality. So he appeared as Mohini Murti, a beautiful woman, and everyone went berserk. I mean, they signed up contrast to their own detriment just because she was attractive, and she completely manipulated them with her attractiveness. So this is at least one way in which we could say that this is true, but I couldn't say that every single politician is like this and every single woman is like this. Personally, I don't see how could that be true. But Maharaj, how did I do? Pretty good. So. My career is not over yet. All right. Yes.
Mike. Everything can be reduced to the basic principles. The basic principle is that Bhagavad Gita, Yaksha Stravidin Gusrida, Vartite Kama Kavarta, Sasidin Vatavati, Masakam Naparambidin, Tasmat Shastram Brahmanam Te, Karya Karya Vyastito, Kyatka Shastram Vinanamto, Karma Karthmi Harasi. That anyone who gives up Shastra and acts whimsically can have neither peace nor happiness nor the supreme destination. Therefore, one should know what is one's duty and what is not one's duty, are the regulations of Shastra, and knowing such duty, one should perform them so that one can gradually become purified. So the point is, as was mentioned in the beginning, that everyone has to be under protection. And the ultimate protection is Shastra. The Brahmins are supposed to know Shastra, and they're supposed to protect everyone else by their instructions. Kshatriyas are supposed to follow the Brahmins' instructions from Shastra, and then they protect the Vaishyas, and the Vaishyas know the Shastra. They're a really good point, protect the cows, etc. So, as soon as one gives up Shastra, it doesn't matter who they are, then they become asuras, basically speaking, as Krishna says. And therefore they can't be trusted, whether there be a king or a woman or anyone else. But therefore women have this, the Brahmins, they can take shelter of Shastra directly, and the kings can take shelter of the Brahmins who are taking shelter of Shastra. But women especially need the physical presence of either their father or their husband or their grown-up son. So they need that. If that presence is there and they follow it, like Sati got a little bewildered. I mean, not exactly bewildered, but she left Lord Shiva's protection because she wanted to defend Lord Shiva. But anyhow, she left it. And that's an example of getting into trouble when you leave your husband's protection. So that physical protection has to be there for a woman. And if it's there and she follows, then she's protected. Then she would be
trusted. Could she went back to the...
Too powerful.
Therefore, so modern society, which doesn't have any idea of what Shastra is, they're simply throwing women underneath the bus. That's all. It's not that women, and they're throwing men underneath the bus, they're throwing everyone underneath the bus because they're totally in ignorance. But in the right social system, everyone is trusted because ultimately they're reflecting the Shastra, which is Krishna.
As soon as one acts under Krishna's direction, then he can be trusted. But there's a system set up which we can see whether someone's acting under Krishna's direction or not. There's symptoms. There's a methodology of ascertaining that. And therefore they're trusted. Only if they do that, anyone who does do that can be trusted.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments over here?
Maharaj, thank you for, in my opinion, excellent lecture and beauty. And also thank you to Maharaj for this beautiful addition. I mean, summary of how things should work in the Vedic society. I have a question. You were mentioning once in the lecture.
Oops. Once.
A few years ago.
I'm in trouble.
You were mentioning a famous Slovenian philosopher. I mean, in context of some internet discussion, but
Slavoj, probably.
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
When he was discussing him with Peterson, this you were watching this and you were disappointed. You know.
I don't remember. Sorry.
No, it's okay.
That doesn't matter. Yeah.
He's criticizing the whole Eastern wisdom as a whole. But I think justly so, because he sees it as a monism. But and he squeezes Bhagavad Gita into it, but if he bothered to open Bhagavad Gita, he would see that it's opposite of monism. And he's often mentioning Suzuki, this Buddhist who was relieving soldiers of responsibility by giving them very impersonal explanation of activity. Mm. So he is very proud of taking responsibility for all his acts. He's very proud of that, and he's a staunch atheist.
But atheism and impersonalism in terms of morality have absolutely same effect.
He doesn't know that, obviously. I mean, he's very proud.
You know, it brings you back to moral relativism. Yeah, in other words, there is no morality. Morality is just a human construct.
Yeah.
And people do behave, materialists behave exactly like that. And you could see, I could see that in war times, because people don't have any pressures. You know, they don't respond to some moral law because they think morality doesn't exist. They think that's just a human construct, you know. And therefore they do any damn thing they want to when they can get away with it.
But I have a bit different question. But where is the moral credit of the one who chooses good? Where is moral credit? Because after all, his decision is informed. He's in some sense ultimately afraid of this pleasure. So I wouldn't come to, you know what is my question. So it can be boiled down to some pretty basic motives of avoiding this pleasure. All the moral decisions, it can ultimately, if you do agree, and if you agree, where is the moral credit, even of the devotee, of choosing Krishna? I chose Krishna because I saw that there is no other choice. So where is my moral credit here, you know?
Well, I'd say that in Krishna consciousness, you may initially have such interest as what is moral and so on, and try to avoid pain and pleasure, but that's not the end of Krishna consciousness. The end of Krishna consciousness is Krishna prema, which is love of Krishna, which is completely, in some ways irrational. There's no calculation there. That's the nature of love. And for God's sake, every time I use that word love, it's disgusting just the way people conceive of the meaning of that word. But prema, that's the nature of it, you know. There's no calculation. Why do you do this, you know, out of fear and so on. But, you know, if you want to have that, if you want to weigh your options, and so if you want to put weights on each side, then this is a heavy weight to be put on the theistic side. And Prabhupada uses this argument, by the way, in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, like, you know, if you're just a pile of chemicals, why do you lament when somebody dies? Just like you don't lament when chemicals are spilled in the laboratory. And in other words, there is no system of, there is no values, you know. Do you want to live in such a world? No one lives in such a world. Even those who claim they do, they're lying, you know, through their teeth. Everyone has a pyramid of values, and whatever is on top of your pyramid of values, that's your God.
Yeah. In modern society, they have what they think is values, but they're actually not values. They're not the real values.
Well, they consider them values. They perceive them as values, yeah.
But the real value starts with the first instruction of Bhagavad Gita, the difference between matter and spirit.
Yeah.
And therefore, it's called Buddhi Yoga, Krishna consciousness. So our value is that we're looking for, first of all, eternity, and then the right activities in eternity, namely devotional service. So that's our value. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita is simply judged not according to mundane morality, which Arjuna, at least at first, was doing, even Shastra morality. But ultimately, the Bhagavad Gita was judged by the spiritual concepts of eternity, super soul, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's our guide. Everyone has it. Morality is supposed to guide you.
but it only goes so far without Krishna consciousness. But the real guideline, the real buddhi, the real is Krishna consciousness. So therefore that Arjuna, when he chose that, then he became fully determined. Otherwise no one could stay determined without that clear consciousness.
Anything else perhaps?
I have a comment and a question. Comment is that regarding those categories, today's differentiation between categories, just one's opinion in which category one belongs to, whether email or email.
Because they're all on drugs. I have no other explanation. That's like really...
My question is in regards to these clashes of interest. Can someone represent Krishna's interest without being aware of it? Can someone lash out like Kamsa? He flipped upon hearing the message. But someone also flip in Krishna's interest without being aware of it, or how to represent Krishna's interest at all times, and or even and my other question.
Yeah. Yeah, that's possible, but that's not bhakti yoga.
Since you're a very keen person, do you have any tips how to always, distance ourselves from the situation? How to remind ourselves, I'm not this that's going on, I'm just a perceiver.
Sorry, you lost me there with the second one.
In this class of interest, it's actually, since the soul is just, completely aloof, and the class of interest is on a material platform, most of the time at least, how to perceive it as such, how to perceive it as a class of interest that in reality isn't anything to do with us, it's just the situation we're in.
Well, it typically does have something to do with us, because we're connected, like you're a soul within a body, And then depending where your consciousness is, on which level, you have certain interests like that. You perceive certain things as interests, and these things clash all the time like that. But, if you think yourself a soul and a servant of a servant, then you have different interests. And a lot less to clash too. But there's clash of interests also in the spiritual world, and they're considered divine clashes. But that's a whole... Those are good clashes. They're all for Krishna satisfaction. But that's some really up there Krishna consciousness that we from here just offer pranams to. Maharaj, would you like to add anything or change anything?
That's good.
Because we're in the material world for so long, or in Krishna consciousness for at least in this lifetime relatively shortly, we forget that unless we see things from the perspective of Krishna consciousness, we're lost. Doesn't mean even we see we're liberated as a soul, and we see everything is external to the, still we're lost. Because we don't know who we really are, or what our purpose of life is, without seeing everything in relation to Krishna, and what Krishna wants us to do. Arjuna wants us to just remain aloof. Krishna said, it's not going to work. You have a right to perform your prescribed duty, but you're not entitled to the results of your work. Neither consider yourself a doer, nor be attached to not doing your duty. So we have to know who we are as Krishna's servant, as you said. The servant is the servant of Krishna. And therefore, serve Krishna. See Krishna's interest. And if we don't see Krishna's interest and act in Krishna's interest, no matter how much aloof we are or whatever, we're lost.
That's our message for today. o'clock has passed. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.